Hey, everybody. I'm Sean Mooney in the MLW Radio Event Center, and here's the latest from the MLW Radio Universe. We are just a little over a month away from MLW One Shot in Orlando, Florida, and things continue to heat up with MLW announcing Olympian Jeff Cobb has signed on to compete on October 5th. But that's not all. For the first time since 2001, Tony Schiavone will put the headset back on and call the action in Orlando with Rich Bocchini. It's the most anticipated show of the fall. Don't miss out. Get your tickets right now at MLW.com. And speaking of Tony, this week on What Happened When, Tony and Conrad talk about charter member of the Four Horsemen, the Enforcer, Arn Anderson. Also on a new episode of Wrestle Rap, Kaz and Emilio are joined by Wi-Fi's Funeral. The rising artist talks about his new album, Boy Who Cried Wolf, his wrestling lineage, what made him a huge wrestling fan, and how it inspires his daily attitude. On Thursday, Marty and Sarah Love Wrestling brings you all the news from their live Summer Slamberation, as well as the debut of a brand new buddy. Wednesday, Bischoff on Wrestling looks at SummerSlam in the aftermath of a very busy week for the WWE. And on Lucha Talk, the guys are joined by Rob Viper as they give a comprehensive preview of this Saturday's Triple Mania and CMLL's upcoming 84th anniversary show. And be sure to catch Primetime with Hacksaw Jim Duggan and me, Sean Mooney. This week, it's all about the life and times of one of Hacksaw's best friends, Jake the Snake Roberts. Search Primetime with Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Sean Mooney on iTunes, all other platforms, and of course at MLWRadio.com. And remember to get your tickets to MLW One Shot starting at just $15 at MLW.com. You do not want to miss it. Now it's time to get back to your MLW Radio podcast.
This is the MLW Radio Network.
It's so hard for me to sit back here in this studio looking at a guy out here hollering my name when last year I spent more money on spilled liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you made. You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kiss stealing, woo, wheeling dealing, limousine like jet flying, son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down. Woo!
To all hustlers with the same interests.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am John Pollock, and after a very long break, it's been record time. Court Bauer is already sick of me. Court, what's going on? It's been a while.
Oh, yeah. It's been about 3 hours, and here we are.
We're
for
back.
The first Bauer and Pollock in a while. So, yeah, it's good to be back again.
You know what? You have been remarkably calm that I know at some point down the road, you are taking today's screw-up on my part, and you're just putting it away for a rainy day. So sometime down the road, should you ever upset me, you've got this in your back pocket that, hey, remember that time you fucked up our show, Pollock? And you know what? I'll have no comeback to that. I don't think this has ever happened. I have had shows that have been completely lost before, and yes, that's frustrating. For those out there, it was only Court's audio that recorded, and mine did not. So
how could we possibly put out a show without my wonderful voice on top of it? I contemplated it. I wonder how this would play. Maybe I'll just tighten up the gaps here, and we'll just get like stream of consciousness with Court Bauer as you react and bring up new points to just talk to yourself for an hour and a half, which would be probably 50 minutes once we took out my parts.
I've done that on a podcast or two in my day, so it wouldn't be the first, but I don't think it would be a very good Bauer and Pollock show. We'd have to cross out your name or something in the graphics, but
Bauer and Bauer. That would be great.
Yeah, just a free-flowing conversation with myself, agreeing at points with myself or some other spirit that's not in the room.
All right, so we are recording, and we have a backup going, which should be our rule. For every show, for all you podcasters out there, always roll on both ends. You can never go wrong. the worst that can happen is one of you, your file is not needed. But for that one in a million chance, you'll be glad you did. So let's dive into the news again. And we're going to start off with the NXT tapings from Thursday night. The biggest news coming out of it, Corey.
Wait. I have to first congratulate you. We haven't talked in some time. You're now a father. You have a newborn baby boy. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yes, I had my first child back in July with my wife, and he's doing fantastic, and thank you. Even got a gift from Court and his lovely wife. So thank you. Another public thank you.
Well,
Court, you're coming across like such a great guy today.
Don't worry. We're only like 2 minutes into this thing. I will turn heel very quickly. I have that quality about me.
If both our recordings screw up, the wrath of Court will come out.
You will see some sort of tirade possibly if this does not work on both ends. But it's been an eventful summer, and NXT really needed a shot in the arm this summer. It really started to feel like they were in the dog days of summer at certain points. And very quickly, they've reshuffled their lineup. I think they're going into the fall with a really solid...
A facelift of talent. Really solid roster,
yeah.
I mean, going into TakeOver, the NXT champion and women's champion are now on their way out. Bobby Roode dropped the title. They've just announced, actually, Bobby Roode's final dates for NXT shows for September. He's going to be doing Rochester, New York, St. Catharines, Ontario, and then his final NXT show is September 9th here in Toronto. And then it looks like he'll be full-time on the SmackDown brand. So they are going to be doing a rematch with him and Roderick Strong over the next few weeks on NXT television. But getting back to the Asuka news, that was the big announcement on Thursday night. She's vacating the title after
Spoiler alert.
Well, the WWE has broadcasted this aloud. They are hardly hiding this fact, so I don't consider it a spoiler. 510 days she has held the title, yeah, and will be moving up to either Raw or SmackDown, they announced. So that is the end of the lengthy title reign, which I guess we will see. Color me pessimistic with this move to the main roster, because I feel this is going to be even more so than Bayley. I think this will be the biggest one that people will focus on, and they will either applaud their ability to transfer that magic they've had in NXT to the main roster, or it will be the most scrutinized one because of what Asuka has attained in NXT and become arguably the biggest star on that brand at the time of her departure.
Yeah, it's so hard to know how she will translate on the main roster, how Vince McMahon himself will look at her. I think she's a marketing machine. You look at their endeavors in Japan with the WWE Network and trying to do as much as they can to bolster their image. They have more Japanese talent probably now than ever before on their roster, if you count all levels of the rosters. And she could be a real critical part of giving the main roster, the women's divisions, something new, something special, because God knows they need it. I like Naomi. I think she's an entertaining act, but her reign as champion really didn't do much for the women's division. I'm not knocking her. It just felt flat. And Charlotte has been missing, obviously, because of what's going on with her father. And they haven't done much with Becky Lynch in this. And you look at the other side, they just crowned Sasha Banks the champion, which I think was that was a good move. And hopefully they now revive both divisions because they needed a shot in the arm. And you can say, listen, it's never good business to drop a title outside the ring and do something like this where you forfeit the title or relinquish it, which sounds classier. You can look at it that way. I think the audience can embrace a more modern version where we've seen in the UFC or in MMA in general, someone cleans out the division and then moves up a weight class. A little different, yet I see some parallels, because with this, you have her basically for 500 plus days just dominating and clearing out her division. So what does one do? She moves on to the next challenge because she's a competitor. There's no other challenges here, but there's plenty up on the main roster. So there's a logical way to do that. And this is the only time you can say, yes, not crowning the champion, there's a solution. You have the Mae Young tournament. You have some great talent at NXT to shake it up. And now there's an opportunity to create some really interesting appointment TV by determining the fate of the championship. I get putting over someone on your way out, but it also feels when you do that every time in NXT, which does have connective tissue within the WWE universe to the main rosters, that it feels a little kind of like you're starting without some momentum. Her coming up with an undefeated streak, with a hell of a run as champion, gives her instant momentum, gives her credibility, and feels like she's going in with a lot. And yet now have like about 2 months before she's properly debuted because of the injury. It's non-conventional by wrestling standards, but I think this can be a win-win in this particular case, given what's going on with NXT, the Mae Young thing, and Asuka needing a little bit of time. So now they can set the table going into, say, November and have her hopefully debut in a big way. Because I was at the Garden when she was on the main roster and she was in a tag match. And boy, the Garden lit up earlier this year for Asuka, and everyone knew who she was, and if you didn't, you were fascinated by the entrance, and she delivered once the bell rang, and that is a key thing for Asuka. She really delivers across the board, so hopefully it goes better for her than it has for others like Bayley, and I sense it will, but you never know.
Yeah, this is one that everyone will watch closely, and I feel it's one that if we look 6 months down the road and Asuka is just at a preliminary level as just another member of the roster, I think it's going to be really hard to digest whatever excuses are out there. The, oh, it's a different audience in NXT. Mm-hmm. It's you've got to have a different presentation on the main roster. Not everyone in the audience knows who she is. All this stuff. I mean, you just pointed it out at the Garden, how she walked out. She's got an unbelievable physical charisma about her. Her promos, to me, they have utilized her in a perfect way where the language barrier has been zero hindrance. You mentioned the merchandise opportunities, the fact that you can take this story of the undefeated streak and move it up to the main roster, make her the subject of a bidding war between Raw and SmackDown. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are so many ways that she can succeed that if it doesn't, I think it's going to be really hard to place anything on her when she's showing at a smaller level how big she can be. And I think it's easily transferable to the main roster. This is, to me, on the main roster to showcase that they can take a surefire talent and exploit them at a higher level.
Yes, and going back to NXT, you look at the revamp lineup. I think having McIntyre with the championship creates a whole different type of title reign than we saw with Bobby Roode. You have Roderick Strong, who's looked his best and been presented his best in 2017. You have TM61 in, you know, lurking. You have so many interesting acts that are going to be showcased.
The Ciampa Gargano feud that you'll eventually get to when Ciampa's ready to come back. That's something they have on the back burner that they can go to down the road. And the new talent coming in, Leo Rush has just reported.
Yep.
Of course, Adam Cole is in. And all these women coming out of the Mae Young Classic that you would assume the pipeline will be to NXT, if not maybe a few trickling to the main roster. So there is a total facelift on NXT that you're going to see over the next couple of months.
You have O'Reilly and Fish. I can't wait to see Fish versus Aleister Black. That to me is a fun match. There's a lot of interesting talent now in the mix there. Gargano's just been amazing. I've really enjoyed him. Almas is a guy that now has a little bit of a facelift with a manager. And it might do the trick. We'll see. He seems to have a little bit more confidence. There's Lars Sullivan, an interesting character if there ever was one. And of course,
Hideo Itami, I think.
Cassius Ohno.
Yeah. Cassius Ohno. Hideo Itami as a heel, I think, has been a perfect fit for him, who is really just floundering and set back with all of those injuries. I really thought he performed very well with Aleister Black on the weekend.
Yeah, and Eric Young working as a babyface as part of the tag team attraction, the tag team championship attraction, I think is going to work rather well for them. So yeah, they have a great mix of talent. Nikki Cross, all these guys, all these women. I think the fall is going to really be strong for NXT going into WrestleMania season. It was a little light for me. I wasn't watching every week because it just lost interest. It lost its vibrancy over the last several months. And sometimes roster chemistry can get funky. And they've done a good job of resetting the table. And I think they're in for a good run there.
Let's move on over Okay. Someone that is not going to be the subject of a bidding war, at least in the near future, between Raw and SmackDown is CM Punk. And we got new information on the lawsuit that is ongoing with Dr. Chris Amon, who works with the WWE. This was provided. Chris Harrington did a big write-up on this at Fightful.com and uncovered a lot of great information about this lawsuit. An interesting quote in all of this. At the end of what appeared to be the discovery phase, Brooks was presented with this bill at the end of all of this for just over $120,000 that he was trying to argue was too exorbitant and lower that. But also in this in these documents that were uncovered from Phil Brooks' side, there was this statement made regarding the podcast he did with Colt Cabana that set all of this ablaze. Said, quote, Brooks made his challenge statements with good motives and for justifiable ends, and even if the statements at issue were not technically or literally accurate in every detail, no reasonable jury could find that the statements were not substantially true. And there's a lot of information involved, so I'd encourage you to go check out Chris Harrington's work. But this, to me, Court, it screams of just a money drain on both sides, a time drain. And while the WWE may not be completely linked to this suit, they are hovering over it significantly, with many believing that they have a direct involvement. But nonetheless, it's gone on for a long time. That interview was in the fall of 2014. So we're coming up on close to 3 years since that interview. And it just seems that this is going to be going on for quite some time between these two sides.
Yeah, and you look at Phil Brooks, and he's told everyone that, you know, he found a new passion in life and he wanted to pursue this challenge in MMA with the UFC. And he wanted to move forward, move on to different things. It's got to be not just a financial drain, but a mental drain to have to deal with this on a somewhat regular basis. Have one of your close friends in Colt Cabana tied into this and deal with that pressure too. And you can't fully move on because you're having to address this. And now when you look at these subpoenas, you know, looking at bills and upwards of six figures, and, you know, I look at that and it's on its own. A big company to claim would cost them, I think they were something like, I think in the article it says $250,000 to go through some of the process of discovery and search emails. It's kind of absurd and nonsensical. You're talking about a process by which they have to search emails, corporate emails. They have a whole legal division. It's not like they're bringing out some forensic team to search through the servers and everything and find specific emails. This is not, to me, something that you can justify, but yet they're claiming they can. I don't know how they can justify these fees, but that's part of this process, and I don't know if Punk and Cabana are challenging that or not. But bottom line is they're making this as painful and expensive as they can when they are involved in this fight. Because again, like you said, they're not directly involved. They aren't the ones pursuing litigation against Brooks and Cabana. That's the doctor who, you know, I understand his position. Doctor's reputation is so important. And
he's claiming he's had, you know, financial hardships as a result of his, just his insurance that has been altered from this. Yeah. And I mean, he cited specific examples of damages. This is not just something where he's claiming mental distress as a result of this. He has actual claims that he has made in this suit.
Yeah. And that's a big part of a defamation slander type case, in that you have to kind of demonstrate damages to try to collect. You can still collect, but it's a little bit more challenging from what I've been told by folks when you have something like this. And so it's an unfortunate situation, because it was a podcast, and maybe you look back to that fateful night in the fall of 2014, maybe both Cabana and Punk wouldn't have done it. Looking back, hindsight being what it is, but they did, and these are the consequences that they're having to endure for both. I mean, it's got to be very difficult. You can say, well, Punk's got more in the bank. Yeah, it still sucks. For Cabana, it's got to really suck. The big question to me is, is the doctor not going to subpoena information to prove he's a good doctor from WWE, to prove, like, you know, all these things that would prove his case or other demonstrations of his great work as a doctor for the company? And does, if he does subpoena that information, this is all hypothetical, but if he does, does he have to pay, or is WWE, what's happening there? You know, and what records is he going to use, and how did he get them? If not through that method, that would be odd. So there's a question there, and I'm not privy to everything. Maybe it's been addressed, but it's an interesting one to discuss. If this is the level, bottom line, that the WWE is willing to put into this from their, you know, hovering state, as you put it, then I don't know what Phil Brooks's threshold is for fighting this. What point do you want to settle? His mentality as a person having known him, the premise of settling does not seem like it would sit well with him. But again, you're at this now, what, 2.5 year mark since he was probably served. At what point do you say, geez, it's time just to move on? And again, the duress it puts you under financially and just emotionally to have to still be tied to something like this, especially if he wants to move on to a life after wrestling. I don't know. It's a tough spot. And I also wonder about his future in MMA. Where is that going at this point? Because as you enter your late 30s, the clock starts to tick down on what you can do as an athlete, even as one that's been in that sport for years. It's challenging. You hear it from a lot of those guys and how they have to fight Father Time. So I don't know what the future in general is for CM Punk. Curious.
Yeah, and one final thing on this is the fact that I don't think it's gotten enough attention that Colt Cabana has been largely an innocent bystander that has been thrust into this very vicious fight between CM Punk, Chris Amon, and the WWE. And to me, I look at all of this that if you're Colt Cabana, like this could very well have been any person out there that conducts an interview and is somehow dragged into this. I mean, I listened to that interview and I don't look at Cabana as someone that was slandering anybody. And yet he's in the midst of this as well. And this is not a guy who's a millionaire. This is significant money. This is life altering money that he could somehow be forced to pay up at the end of this case. And I think that that's certainly, when you mentioned the fact that someone would be having second thoughts about putting out an interview like this, it's not all that different from what you're looking at with other media companies out there. The biggest one being the Gawker Hulk Hogan case, where it's going to really scare a lot of reporters or journalists out there from putting out anything if the threat is there that someone with an unlimited amount of money can drag you into court and let it go on and bleed you for money, just the time involved in all of this. And it's a pretty concerning thing that when you see a lot of fans out there that will see wrestlers being wronged for various issues within the industry, this is not one I see that gets a big spotlight of someone like a Colt Cabana, who, if I had done the exact same interview, I would have not thought twice about uploading this and putting it out there. Because yes, Colt Cabana is a close friend of CM Punk. He's not necessarily independent in this whole thing, but this was not an issue on him. I think Phil Brooks and what he said, vastly different from what Colt Cabana's participation in this was, and yet he is subject to this outcome as well.
It's very troubling.
We will keep going here. Going back to this past Monday night, there was an unfortunate injury to Big Cass as he was delivering a running boot into the ropes, crashed down to the floor. Appears he tore his ACL and has since undergone surgery on the left knee. They're pegging this at about a 9-month recovery time, which has got to be a very frustrating time for an injury, because it's going to be up in the air and touch and go for WrestleMania, which I think if you were having to guess, he would likely miss WrestleMania as a result of this injury. Unfortunate, he was in the midst of a push, mm-hmm. and this is going to be a setback, but also one in which we'll see how he is brought back and utilized after this. But never a great time to tear your ACL, but it's tough when WrestleMania is suddenly jeopardized, because that is what all of these guys base their year around.
Yeah, it really is. And he's been in the WWE system really since about 2011. So you're going on year six, year seven here, and he's finally getting his big push. So it's a catastrophic moment in his career. He's still a young guy, and I'm sure they're going to have him ready creatively when he comes back. And if he doesn't make WrestleMania, he'll be right after that, and he'll surely make a big splash. Ideally, you always want to participate in WrestleMania for the check. And for a lot of guys, there's an emotional component to it. For me, I would be just about the check, but I'm cold-hearted. And the thing with Cass, though, is just looking at that match at SummerSlam was so, to me, bizarre, so upside down, creative dyslexia with Enzo in that cage lubing himself up as a heel to cheat the stipulation and then weaseling out as a heel. And he had he was cornering a bigger man than Cass is, just size wise bigger dude and Big Show. And it just, if you had just muted the soundtrack and reversed the audio so the pops were for Cass and the boos were for Enzo and Show, that'd be a pretty decent dynamic at play in terms of booking. The way they did that, it was one of the most perplexing pieces of business WWE's done in a while, where it's just like, this seems so reverse, so counterintuitive to what you do typically in these kind of cases. And I love the Shark Tank cage gimmick for a manager. I've always been a fan of it. And you don't see it on the indies because, God, the cost associated with flying in a Shark Tank cage, not so easy, not so affordable for most. So WWE's basically the only place you can see it. And they did it the reverse. It was odd.
It was awful. It was a pretty bad match on Sunday. Yeah. That too.
Okay, yes.
Well, how about Enzo's future? He has now been shifted to 205 Live. Mm-hmm. I think that's a show that definitely is open for ideas to throw against the wall, because this has hardly been a show that has been a true success. And Enzo now finds himself, he's kind of now a big fish in a small pond in terms of being the most over character on that show, but it's also one in which, from an in-ring perspective, he would be at the bottom of the depth chart, I would assume. So it's a unique mix. Are you curious to see if this is going to work, or do you view this as simply a demotion for Enzo?
Oh, it's no doubt a demotion for him. How they spin it to Enzo when they told him they were calling him down, or saying, hey, you're going to be on two shows now. Isn't that great? Twice the opportunity, I'm sure, is how they presented it. But the reality is, it's obvious. He is not earmarked like he was a year ago doing big things. And he has great merchandise. You see a lot of people wearing the Enzo hats and all the stuff with the puffy hair. So he is a merchandising machine. I don't know how well he does, but I think he does pretty decently. But there's also been the bumpy road he's had behind the scenes over the last few months that have been documented. So he's definitely at a crossroads. And he's always been a guy that's down to take on challenges. He has a lot of ambition. If there's one guy that's going to kick out and make this perceived negative into a positive, it is Enzo. Ultimately, in the long term, where is he in 12 months based on his trajectory over the last 6 months? I don't know. And wrestling's weird. It can go in a lot of different directions. But he could also be a guy that in about 12 months is the top manager when Paul Heyman's not around, because I do see ultimately a guy like Enzo having a long career as a manager. He reminds me, he has some of the qualities of Captain Lou. Not all the qualities of Captain Lou, but a lot of them. He can be abrasive, and he could get involved as a tag team act as a manager and stuff. So I think he's got long-term viability at a high level as a manager. As an in-ring guy, it's going to be always a struggle. We'll see what happens over the next few months with this 205 Live thing. I even wonder what the future of 205 Live is based on all the changes with the WWE Network and their programming and their budgets for their programming. So a lot of questions.
Yeah, I mean, there's the one side where you cannot deny that 205 Live, it has not captured the imagination of its audience. And I think it's a pretty diehard audience that is continually watching this show every week. At what point are you looking at? Like, certainly you don't want to see guys lose jobs, and that would be the end result if they pulled the plug on 205 Live. There's not the justification to have that many guys under contract unless they have their own show. But are you looking at after a year? It's coming up on a year in November since that show launched, that you're going to have something fresh with the Mae Young Classic, that you alter things. To me, it's not so much who's involved. It's just it's been the presentation of this show. And it there's a million things you can list that worked in the Cruiserweight Classic that were not taken from and not adopted and applied to this show.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the best things about the Classic last summer, it's hard to believe it's been 13 months now, is that it felt global. It felt very focused on the athleticism in the ring. And you had a smaller, more distinct feel with the Orlando crowds down at Full Sail. Being in that big arena, putting the purple lighting and ropes and branding, I think it was detrimental to the cause. If you're going to do a specific division like this, I think it either stands on its own or maybe it should have been part of NXT. I always was concerned with it being part of Monday Night Raw more than SmackDown, but really Raw, which I get 3 hours, they should be able to tell their stories and have it, the title focused, and it just never was a priority, will never be a priority. I think they should have just extended the initiative they started last year by doing it where they were doing it already and having a similar feel. When the focus has been for so long to have Alicia Fox front and center as basically the focus of the division is a little odd. I'm all for stories with cruiserweights, and I think that's important to have rivalries, have an athletic dimension to it, but also
good stories
and stuff that isn't going to feel redundant. I mean, Alicia Fox probably is exhausted by being the same damn thing this long, and it's not a knock against her saying, oh God, you know, Alicia Fox show, but I think it's not even the best use of her. So, you know, and it's gotten away from what it was last year, and it's unfortunate, but maybe with Enzo involved, maybe they can continue to change this thing and alter the course. It certainly needs a shot in the arm, and Enzo, he can be that spark, perhaps. He'll be working with a lot of great, talented guys, for sure.
As we look, we're discussing WrestleMania for next year. It's going to be a question mark for Cass. Is there a likelihood, in your estimation, that The Undertaker will work WrestleMania next year?
I don't hope for such. He's a great legend. I have all the respect in the world for him. But after the last few years, I think it's best that we call it a run. I know he was in New York for various reasons the past over the weekend, I guess. He was there for a checkup on his recent procedure he had done here in New York a few months back. And I understand he also did the WWE 2K scans and met with WWE officials, which could have been a conversation about politics, Yankees, who knows. But I don't...
The state of 205 Live.
Guys, what's going on with Alicia Fox? And then he rolls his eyes back. I don't know. What would be the match if you did bring him back? Would it be, I mean, like, where do you go with that? And to me, if they really do pursue that, it's really an indictment against their own creative process that they have to go back to that well one more time when it's pretty much tapped at this point, because you can see he's just physically can't do what he once did. And now you're really devaluing the legacy of The Undertaker, which would suck. But, you know, sometimes with guys, it's not just about the feeling of coming back for one more match. It's the payday. And when it comes to a payday, a lot of guys will look the other way.
Yeah. I mean, when you're looking at the matches, I mean, the two that come to mind are the John Cena one everyone's talked about. And then other than that, Braun Strowman. But I feel that it was, to me, pretty conclusive at the end of this year's WrestleMania. It'd be very hard to just forget that. And we're coming back. And for what reason? Like, I don't think you can promote a retirement match after you went so far out of your way this past year. Like, that was a closing scene that I think everyone, yeah. I don't think anyone was watching that final scene thinking that the guy was maybe just really hot in this Orlando sun and needed to take his jacket off and leave it. I mean, that was the closing shot of WrestleMania, of the biggest show of the year. And it followed a good but hardly great match with Roman Reigns that I feel many would be happy if that was the send-off, and the next chapter and final one for The Undertaker is the Hall of Fame, and that's it.
Yeah, and even that, I mean, there's ways, I guess, of doing it, but I know he's been very apprehensive about even being in the arena for the Hall of Fame, even though he has immense respect and wanted to honor some of his colleagues that were inducted. He felt to protect the gimmick, he had to stay away. But now that's hopefully in the past. He's now transitioning to a civilian, in theory.
Maybe so. He'll ease into it. He'll do swerved, then work his way up to table for three.
It's such a strange thing. Listen, maybe he can come back and do WrestleMania, and they call it Undertaker One Shots. I'm doing it.
Seems everyone's using that name now.
It's a good name. I wonder where we got it from. Maybe this podcast. I don't know.
Yeah, it's been well, in fairness, you came up with the name, so I guess you can use it in perpetuity for all the future. But what a shock when I heard what MLW is coming back and being rebranding for their first show back, the One Shot. Which, will it really be a one shot, Court? Is this really contingent on what kind of a demand there is? What'll a follow up show be?
Well, that's the thing. People have asked, I think that's like the number one question at this point. It's like, so when's the next show? You're going to do more than this, right? And I'm like, man, it took me a few years just to even think about doing something like this. But because of like what we felt like, we got a lot of these questions at Wally Mania and the after party at Wally Mania the whole weekend from friends and fans in Orlando was, you know, it'd be great to see MLW come back. I said, man, I don't even think I could do one shot. And that's really where the name originated from. It's just a term in my head always. And I guess because of this podcast. And, then we started talking about it more and more in the aftermath of Wally Mania. I said, well, you know, we have a venue that really wants to host this. We have a lot of great connections down there, a lot of great talent down there. And I'm surrounded by a lot of great people behind the scenes to help make this thing a success. So let's try it. Let's give it a whirl for one night, and do one shot. And working with guys like Ricochet and Shane Strickland have been phenomenal. They've been great. And we announced recently Jeff Cobb is in the mix, MVP versus Sammy Callahan. And to recruit Tony Schiavone to come back after 16, 17 years away from the wrestling broadcast booth is a huge honor, because I didn't think he'd ever do it. And when he said yes, I was just blown away and like, oh my God, I can't believe you said yes. And it's been great to see Tony this year kind of come back to what he grew up loving. He was a fan since a kid watching wrestling in Virginia, the Mid-Atlantic territory. And so for him to come back, I think for one shot, one night only kind of thing, and maybe end his career in wrestling on an up note, hopefully, that'd be such
don't,
a great
don't disparage the XWF like that.
Well, no, I'm just saying it just, I think it would be for him to come back and kind of finish off the year, kind of like bookends and do something like this. And hopefully it's a positive experience for him and everyone, would be great. And that's what I hope. And he's got a great team, tag team partner in Rich Bucchini, who everyone remembers as Rich Brennan in NXT, and SmackDown. He himself was inspired to get into wrestling and do broadcasting because of listening to JR and Tony growing up on TBS. So it's kind of cool to see that come full circle. So it's been a fun experience. Like back in the day, there was a lot of challenges and things have changed, you know, whether it's who you surround yourself with, the talent, the conditions, the technology. This has been like, I'm waiting for something to happen that's a big challenge, because this has been really easy. But when you have guys like MSL and Alex Greenfield, who will be doing a lot of producing behind the scenes, and Robert Karplis, both of guys I worked with at WWE, and George Carroll, who I've worked with Ring of Honor and worked with and other things, including I brought him in for Combate Americas, and now he's with New Japan. To have that kind of infrastructure to help with this just makes my job look – I look great because they make my job easier, but they're doing a great job. And, you know, we don't have like a creative team. I don't believe in that. I've said that on this podcast a million times. It's, just, I'm booking this bad boy along with, MSL as my, right hand man. And, we hope it's a good show. We hope people enjoy the show. And, you know, it's been an experiment, the whole thing, including doing the, little 360 series we're doing, MLW 360, which is kind of like wrestling's version, I guess, of UFC Embedded, you know, kind of just building the main event in a different way, getting to know the real people behind what you see in the ring. So it's been an interesting experience. It's been a busy summer for both of us, you having a son and me returning to my firstborn baby here. So we'll see what happens this fall.
We've also got, speaking of a weird experiment, the WWE No Mercy event. That's their next pay-per-view all the way September 24th. It's going to be headlined by Brock Lesnar and Braun Strowman. John Cena's also advertised for this show. Mm-hmm. And if Wikipedia can be trusted, the official theme song for No Mercy Court is going to be, which was brought to my attention by you, Look What You Made Me Do by Taylor Swift, which I pray is true.
It everywhere we've researched this is what we're finding out. So Taylor Swift, who has a new album out this November, and think
the song is just getting panned by people. I have yet to hear it, but there's been a lot of criticism about this song, which, great, if it gets a lot of discussion, I'm glad the WWE is using this. I want to see a Braun Strowman video package done to this song.
Oh my god. Well, I mean, the song, I guess she disses Kanye and Kim and all that, so a little bit of scandal involved. But I'm surprised WWE is able to get a Taylor Swift song associated with their event. She's very strategic with where she wants to be and where her music should be, including if you look at Tidal and Spotify and stuff. She's very strategic with where it rolls out, when it rolls out. So this, to me, still is like, is this real? We should like get WWE on the line to just verify this, because it seems so out of place. But right now, that's the plan for No Mercy's theme song for September show at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. And also the fact that WWE has two sponsors for this event, not one but two, as you probably found out when they were shilling it this week. Little Caesars Pizza Pizza and Mountain Dew, your favorite neon colored soda. So
the breakfast of champions.
Let me tell you, I'm really hungry right now, having done two of these fucking podcasts. I wouldn't mind an order of Mountain Dew and Little Caesars. So hey, why don't you sponsor this show, because I'm hungry right now.
Well, that is happening. What are your thoughts on Brock Lesnar, Braun Strowman headlining this show? Mm-hmm. I have been so high on Braun Strowman, especially this summer. I mean, to me, every marker you have set for this guy, he has hit from the slow build over the last year up into the main event scene, a look that kicks ass, a main event style that totally gels with the heavyweights in the main focus title scene. And to me, like, this is the guy, if I'm putting my currency down on a guy that's going to break through and be that full-time top baby face, this is the guy I'm leaning towards. And I would be looking at WrestleMania as a big crowning moment for him. They're going with the title match here in September, but to me, Braun Strowman has been just a home run from any which way you want to look and address and assess a main event star.
And they dodged a bullet with his injury earlier this year, and that was a great thing. That, I mean, he could have really been
a very, very physical style for his size. Mm-hmm. I mean, I watched that guy and, man, he's going to have a few surgeries in his career.
Well, I hope not. The one thing I'll say is, you look at that decision to break him off of the Wyatt family and throw him into the deep end, and Vince loves doing that sometimes to talent. Most struggle and will drown. This is not one of those cases. He's done a great job. And from what I understand, he really, when a top star, whether active or inactive, takes his ear and gives him advice, he always executes it. There have been guys in the past that were earmarked for great things, pushed hard, but they would kind of get that advice and not apply it, or just be goofy about it. He has put in the work. He's applied that knowledge, and that's a big thing. And even just little things, just changing his look a little bit, shaving the sides of his head so he didn't look like Ogre from Nerds, I thought was a great, great move. And I know, dated reference, but he does look like Ogre from Nerds. I know. It's been a plus, and I think that match is going to be a hell of an attraction. They know how to book him. They've done a great job booking him, laying out that match at SummerSlam. You look at that match, they really showcased him in a phenomenal way. Even though he didn't win the title, it really felt like they did some unique things, some different things that I haven't seen done, like that taking that big table and dropping it on Brock. That was a great visual. It really was. So, I think they've done a phenomenal job. I'm curious to see where he goes in the next 6 to 12 months. I still think he needs to work on his facials. There was moments where the camera was tight on him on Monday night and on Sunday night, and I was like waiting for something, more of a sinister grin or something, just something. And that's one area he needs to still up his game on, but you can't expect all this at once. I think it will happen, and it'll be cool to see where they go with this in September and thereafter, because what's the future of Brock Lesnar? John Jones' fight is up in smokes. Maybe now more than ever, the UFC needs a Brock Lesnar. His contract expires right after WrestleMania in New Orleans.
Timing? I mean, you would think after the last contract, which timed out to that, you would think maybe for this contract, it's like, Brock, you know what? Instead of 3 years on the dot, we're going to go 3.5. How about we end at a less crucial time in the calendar? Because I feel even if they are starting now to talk with him, I don't see a deal being done until right up until WrestleMania time. And Brock, to me, after this John Jones story, which granted, there's still the process that has to go through. I think at minimum, even if Jones can prove it's a tainted supplement, which it may be, I think he's facing minimum a year, and that might be extremely generous. So the Brock Jones fight, to me, less likely than ever. However, if the UFC is looking at a 2018 with no Ronda Rousey, no John Jones, and a question mark as to what is next for Conor McGregor, to me, Lesnar's value has increased because they need a Band-Aid solution, and he represents that. So I feel the UFC will make a concerted effort to lure Brock Lesnar back, that he can still play that leverage. And on top of that, all of this has been built around Roman getting that big win over Brock, and Brock has to understand that after that loss to Reigns, what is his value to this company? What do they see? What are they seeking out of Brock Lesnar beyond the Roman Reigns loss? And that's another card that Lesnar carries going into WrestleMania as a negotiating tactic.
Yeah, he put on 2 more months on that contract, and it's a lot easier to do business. But and the other thing is, what is he worth to Vince at this point or in 2018? Is he – I mean, we know where the WWE subscriptions are going. I'm sure he does decent business on his merchandise. Does he pop the houses like they anticipated he would when they put him on house shows? Where do you assess Brock Lesnar if you're Vince McMahon and you're the inner circle and you are looking at maybe UFC getting competitive for a short-term deal? Do you just sit out, let them just take him? Do you need him? Does he really alter the course of WWE in 2018 going into 2019? Or do you see 2019 as a pivotal year because you have your own TV contract up and you want to double down on star power? There's a lot of moving parts to this, and I'm curious to see what happens to Brock Lesnar and – by virtue of what happens to Brock Lesnar, what happens to Paul Heyman, who I still believe can contribute so much more to WWE than just presenting one star in a limited capacity. He has so much more to offer behind the scenes and as talent that I hope we don't see a WWE on the flip side of WrestleMania New Orleans where there's no Paul Heyman in the WWE universe, because he's a must for WWE in a lot of ways. He can be the connective tissue for so many of their stories, especially surrounding heel talent. And they've tried other guys, and it's just never been the same.
It's hard to imagine what this Lesnar run, how long it would have lasted without Paul Heyman. And it could have been given up a whole lot earlier. Brock Lesnar has made a lot of money over the last 5 years, with a big reason being Paul Heyman at his side. Because you take those promos away, that's a significant part of the Brock Lesnar package and his value on television.
Yeah, it is. And he's a very special attraction, and Paul Heyman's done a great job of helping him navigate deals and matches. I mean, he is very much a part of the package thing. Even though they have their separate deals, they need each other. And Paul Heyman is less effective in the UFC than he is with WWE. There's more there for Brock. And as you look at 40 for Brock Lesnar going to 41, what do you really want to do? I've known guys that have tried the fight camps when they're about 39, 38, and they said, yeah, I tried to get back in there and train. I couldn't do it. It was just too hard for me. So can he do those fight camps as he gets older? He's a genetic beast. I mean, he really is. So maybe it wouldn't be so difficult for him. He just did one last year, but it would be a challenge. But UFC needs him when you don't know where the future of GSP, Ronda Rousey, McGregor, which we'll get to later, where are these guys collectively in the future. And they have not done a good job of building a next generation. They have not done a great job at all. And John Jones, big question mark. Does he end up in the WWE in 2018? Does Ronda end up in the WWE in 2018? I would say there's a chance one of them does, maybe. More maybe Ronda than John Jones, but Jones is going to need to make money. If his suspension's more than a year, he really has to start thinking about where he goes. What does he do? I don't see him as a talking head on Fox Sports. I don't see that. But I don't know if he'd do the wrestling thing. He's done the crotch chops. And, he does have some wrestling in him.
If he would be allowed. Like, he's still got a contract with the UFC that prohibits pro wrestling. For everyone that's suggesting a suspension would lead to him doing a WrestleMania, it would still take the blessing of the UFC, who may not be all that interested in giving Jones any kind of a break. But this is a guy that very well could be – he has to find something to do during this – like, he's going to face something. Barring a miracle where there was a problem with the test and he's let off scot-free, which is virtually impossible. Mm. I mean, he's going to walk away with some time gone, and it could be as much as 4 years.
Yeah, that's the crazy part. That's 4 years, and he has to look at every option available to him on the table. And if he says he's going to get into acting or something, good luck. But 4 years, I mean, yeah, that could be the ceiling on this kind of suspension. And look, WWE taking a guy like John Jones, who is – Let's not dance around it. He's damaged goods in a lot of ways. How does that work?
And, he's not he's a star. He's not Conor McGregor.
No,
he's not Floyd Mayweather Jr. doing WrestleMania. He's a star in UFC, but he's not a star in the mainstream sports world.
And Conor's another guy. Do I see him in WWE the next year? I think the chances are greater that he'll be in the WWE possibly in the next 12 to 18 months than a UFC octagon. For the price he was paid to do those fights and the training he had to put in for those fights, based on what he's getting paid this weekend, I don't know. Crazier things have happened. Also, I just want to say, as part of this John Jones discussion, John Jones on Twitter, @JohnJones, is the greatest thing ever, because it's not John Jones. It's another dude that has the same name. It's a fairly common name. And so when this news broke, his Twitter, he basically wrote
– this happens during every Jones scandal. Everyone tweets this guy thinking it's the fighter John Jones. And this guy has such an incredible wit. And
he's great.
Hilarious.
He should be signed by someone. I mean, he's very good on that social media handle.
He did his own Reddit AMA the other day. Like, he's this like closet celebrity as a result of this name. Like, there's people angry at him that he's got this Twitter handle. Like, how dare you, John Jones, be using the handle of another John Jones? It's fantastic, and he plays it so well.
He does.
A fun follow. On Saturday night, and we'll talk about the fight in a minute, mm-hmm. but also, if you are just concentrated on professional wrestling, Triple Mania has their card, which they've set up a unique deal with Twitch where you can watch it for free. Starting at 8:00 Eastern. And mm-hmm. of course, it's also going to be joined in progress on Televisa in Mexico.
Yeah.
So the main event with Psycho Clown and Dr. Wagner Jr. will probably end up being one of the most watched pro wrestling matches of the year. But there's a lot of GFW talent sprinkled throughout the show. And I know I'm going to be watching the boxing coverage Saturday night, but hopefully this will be up after, because I will plan to watch this on Sunday.
Yeah, and this match has been in the works for just about a year, and something Dorian Roldan brokered himself. He saw this. He wanted to do something special for 25, and originally, I was talking with him about setting him up with pay-per-view in around February, March of this year, because that is my role when I've done these deals. I'm not producing it. I'm not in the truck doing any of that stuff.
Well, why not?
That's just not what I do on those deals. I furnish them with the contracts, and then it's up to them to produce the show like they normally would. I didn't do that for 2015 Triple Mania. Same thing like this. Just set them up for to do business on pay-per-view. That is it, believe it or not. And they really gave me a headache back in 2015. But we were talking about putting this on pay-per-view, and ultimately that didn't happen. But I was privy to a lot of what they were looking to do, and they really, a lot of this business is built around their Televisa national TV deal for Triple Mania on Saturday night. And that is a phenomenal thing that they got going on a Saturday night to be on Televisa. We had been talking, I was trying to get them to move to Sundays because it was conventional for pay-per-view to be on a Sunday, and saying, hey, never know, there might be a UFC on a Saturday night. You don't want to risk it. Well, it probably worked out for the best that they did it the way they did it, because I don't know if on a Sunday in Mexico this would have worked as well. I think Saturday night's going to be a huge success for them. The Twitch feed, hey, you have nothing to lose. In past years, you've had to pay on a traditional pay-per-view to buy it, or iPay-per-view, or you wouldn't be maybe satisfied with how that experience went. Here, it's free. I mean, you can't lose. And as kind of an appetizer for the Mayweather fight, you have some free lucha, and it's one of the biggest shows of the year. To see that free is awesome. And you can also see the free, you can get a free stream of the Arena Mexico show on most Friday nights, and that's a fun time also if you want to binge on some lucha. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on there. I want to bring this up before we get too late in the podcast, but WWE 2K18, they released a roster, and they feature some very interesting names, some big-time luminaries, including some great legends. You have also in there Goldberg. You have John Cena. You have Shinsuke Nakamura. And, of course, your favorite wrestler. I know you're going to be playing this game because it features Brutus the fucking Barber Beefcake.
It better be quick. Brutus Beefcake. So I could buy this game. Mm-hmm. And I could see what Shinsuke Nakamura versus Ed Leslie would look like.
No, not Ed Leslie. Brutus the Barber Beefcake with hedge clippers.
Oh, man. It's a great deal to get in if you're Ed Leslie, because you could have a new downloadable character for the next 10 years of different gimmicks.
Yeah.
Booty man with no name.
Absolutely.
Disciple. I mean, you could just go through all of them with this guy.
It's so funny. I was looking at the name. It's like, here's the legends. Here's all the talent. You see Daniel Bryan. You see Goldberg. You see Earthquake, Larry Zbysko, Eddie Guerrero, Jim the Anvil, Neidhart. And there it is, right next to the Godfather, actually. It's Brutus the Barber Beefcake, which that would have been an interesting tag team, the Booty Man and the Godfather.
Wow. Could the Hall of Fame be far from those hedge clippers making their way in?
Oh.
with Brutus, I would assume they wouldn't just induct the hedge clippers, but maybe.
Based on the criteria for the WWE Hall of Fame, yes, it's possible. And it's actually a good point there, is today would have been Ivan Koloff's 75th birthday. He had just recently passed away, and I can't believe he wasn't honored while he was alive by being put into the WWE Hall of Fame, having been such a big part of the WWF with that big title switch in the 70s. I just don't understand how they whiffed on that one. Some of them, they really do a great job of getting. This one, I couldn't believe they wouldn't have honored him.
We haven't talked about anything in a long time because we haven't done a show in a while. But
we did one this morning. What are you talking about?
Well, a year ago, this had a lot more focus, especially last fall, and that was the launch of Flow Slam. Mm. And I signed up for Flow Slam last December, mm-hmm. and I signed up for the year. And I've got to say, as we are speaking now in August, I can't imagine renewing this when my 1 year subscription comes up. I do my best to watch the Evolve shows. Mm-hmm. I like the style battle events, mm-hmm. the ones that I have seen, but I can't say that this is something that is a necessity. And I think it's been pretty underwhelming what the rollout has been. What I know that they were in talks with a lot of different promotions out there, but the end product, it certainly hasn't lived up to those expectations that this is a must-have if you are following professional wrestling.
Yeah, it started with a real big rollout, and there was lots of speculation. Arena Mexico, AAA, Ring of Honor, et cetera, New Japan perhaps would all somehow participate in this thing. And they've experimented over the last several months with different price changes, which I think they now reverted back to their the original strategy, if I'm not mistaken. And they've had some ups and downs internally with staff and stuff. So I don't know where they go at the end of this this cycle. They have some contracts that are up, I guess, in 2018. We'll see where their future is. And for those that participated, I think especially Evolve, they did very well by this, and it gave them another boost of marketing exposure. Gave them when you're in that level, regular money coming in is not a bad thing. And they didn't have to deal with the headaches and logistics of the streams and stuff. That was someone else. So, I mean, for them, it was probably a real positive. And it probably put more eyes on their product. I don't know that as a fact, but I would think it did.
I think Evolve being on a service where you're not paying a la carte per event, I think that's a move forward. Yeah. I think that it's better to have – it's just a one-time payment, or it's a monthly thing, and you're part of a package, as opposed to – hoping to get fans to buy each show individually. I think that's a better model. It's just, what is the capacity for your fan base that are going to keep Flow Slam and continually paying for this monthly, especially when there was, I mean, God, this thing was looking like it could potentially be a game changer for performers, for promotions last November, and it hasn't realized any of that potential.
And I kind of think, I don't want to put you in an awkward spot, but look at the Fight Network and the strategy, how it shifted from being all about wrestling, boxing, and MMA. And in the last several months, it's shifted more towards, let's get Smash on Fight Network. Let's get more AAA on Fight Network. We have GFW.
The wrestling has provided a much bigger audience for primarily. I mean, when it comes to – I mean, there still is a lot of they still air UFC content mm-hmm. quite a lot up here, but it's UFC. And other than that, I mean, pro wrestling, they have found they can gain much more of an audience with just pro wrestling, even if it's non-WWE, as opposed to non-UFC mixed martial arts. So you look at the schedule, it's heavily made up of pro wrestling now, between all of the Impact Wrestling content. Smash Wrestling is on there. New Japan.
I think it wants to, they're going to do something. So, I mean, and they're going out, they're hunting for it, and they have a little piece of the United States with their deal with Cablevision here in New York. So they're on in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. And also, if you have the Fight Network app, you can access, I think, I don't know if all of that, but some of that wrestling content. I know each deal is different, they carve it out. But
well, they mentioned on Impact last week that they're going to be launching like a Global Force Wrestling, some kind of
OTT
service. Yeah. And I wonder what is the appetite for an app like that? If it's TNA GFW content, do they have a library that is going to be something that people need to have?
I think that was a few steps too early. They're still in the process of resetting, and they're still trying to find what they are in this new era. We saw the belts recently be rolled out with an owl in some cases on them, and they now are again resetting with their championship story. So I don't know. I don't know where GFW is in terms of an appetite for the product at that level. They have to be very cautious, very careful with how they proceed, because they are in a very delicate position of trying to reform or revamp GFW. I think in general, you know, they've made some good gets, some great gets in some cases on talent, but they still need to blow this thing up. And where are they at the end of this year with Pop TV? Because they can't. That's not going to sustain them. You're not going to have a viable OTT if you're just on Pop. You're going to need more. And really, it's so weird, because more now than ever in the history of wrestling, maybe that's a big statement, but right now at least, I look at the appetite for wrestling on cable, and it's not there. It's not there. So people looking for those $7 to $8 million contracts like TNA had back in the day on Spike, those aren't going to materialize right now. They're just not there.
Look at, I mean, and it was a time where it was just simply non-WWE there wasn't the appetite for. Even WWE, we've seen. Look at over the last number of years with superstars. They had the Saturday Morning Slam. They've gone away. Mm-hmm. The UK show that they haven't been able to land a home for. You have to imagine that they at least kick the tires when they're introducing a show like a 205 Live to first see if there's television money. That it's just – it seems like there is definitely – you have – the USA Network, that they have their fill of wrestling, and outside of that, it's very difficult to see if there's going to be that outlet that's going to not necessarily put you on the air, but pay you to be on the air significant dollars. And that's what Global Force Wrestling needs, that if they are still on Pop and in 2018, that to me, you can't grow on a platform like Pop TV.
Well, it's a barter deal. I mean, by virtue of what it is, it doesn't work. It won't work in the long term. It's a Band-Aid situation, and I don't know where they go from here and how they're performing off the top of my head. I don't know in terms of their ratings performance versus where they were at the beginning of the year. All these things. These things are what you examine if you're going to do a deal. I don't know. I don't know. Speaking about GFW, very curious to see what the future there is for Alberto El Patron. We saw Low Key depart the company this week, and there's been a lot of rumblings about the future of Rey Mysterio in GFW. Johnny Impact, a.k.a. John Morrison, debuted this past week with Taya. So a lot of comings and goings, and it's got a different feel than it did a year ago, that's for sure.
Yeah, I actually inquired about Low-Key, but was not given a response regarding his status. I think, he to me has been a great addition over the past year. I mean, he certainly does have his history of being difficult to work with, but also someone that I think looks at his own value and views himself as an independent contractor that understands his worth. And sometimes you can say he becomes difficult to work with, but I'm not going to deny that he's been a great asset to that show as a overall performer on that show.
My experience working with Low Key is simple. If you're straight up and forthcoming with him and you explain what you're doing and you back that up and do it, he's happy as hell. That's it. It's that easy with someone like that. If you're a man of your word and this is what we're going to pay you, this is what the ideas are, and this is how we're going to use you, and then you execute. Guys like that, they don't have a problem. He was easy for me. When I've worked with him in the past, with MLW, in fact, he was easy. He was easy as hell. He just doesn't want to deal with the bullshit. And anyone with their job, you don't want to deal with bullshit. And he doesn't take much of it. And so if you know that, you know the rules of engagement with a guy like that. If they've done a few dances with him, buyer beware. You know what you're going to have to do and how you're going to have to conduct business. And if you don't, it's the end of the road. One guy I want to bring up that we thought was the end of the road for him in wrestling, but it's not. It's a quick little update on Tyson Kidd, who I think the world of. He's a phenomenal wrestler. And, of course, June 2015 in San Antonio, he had a horrible freak injury happen when wrestling in a dark match against Samoa Joe, just a complete sheer accident. And that subsequently ended his career, and he had to have surgery on the neck, and it was pretty scary stuff. And for a while, everyone was wondering, well, what's the future of Tyson? Where is he at? What's he doing? We haven't heard or seen of him. And the good news is he's back in wrestling. He's working for WWE behind the scenes as an agent. He started this summer, and I'm so glad for him to be able to still participate and be involved in wrestling, which he's done since he was like 9 or 8 years old. He's been a part of wrestling his whole life. He's basically been a member of the Hart family his whole life. And so for him to contribute in WWE as an agent / producer behind the scenes, I think is a win-win for the talent and for him to be able to still do what he loves in a different way. I'm thrilled for him. So Tyson's back in WWE, just doing something different because obviously his injury, I don't think he could ever wrestle again because of it, but he's a great guy. So it's a happy ending for him in that he still gets to be in the business, get a check, and be happy. You know, that's a big part of being in this business. It's, yes, it's about the money. It's about the passion too. And, for Tyson, I'm glad that he's been able to, go back home to WWE this summer.
Yeah, and one of those rare young veterans that has not just come up in one exclusive style. He has worked all over the world and brings a great mind to that role. When you have exposure to so many different forms and presentations of professional wrestling, that I think that's an asset that not all guys and women are going to have that are coming up.
Sure. And he really is and always has been the same kind of guy. You know, just he has the same passion. He's the same professionalism he had. When I first met him, he was 18 and Harry was 17 when I actually worked for me in 2004 in MLW. And dude was just as chill, just as big of a pro as he is now then. Just a great stand-up guy. And it's you know, it was hard to see him have to, you know, go through what he did with the health stuff, with the surgery and everything. But he always had such a good attitude. He's a real good dude. And so again, I'm just happy that that story has a happy ending. In wrestling, sometimes it doesn't happen. But for him to be a part of what he is given his life to is pretty cool to see him back there.
I swear to God, someone's calling me on my phone from Switzerland, and I have no clue who that is. Maybe
Cesaro?
Maybe it's Cesaro who wanted to add his own 2 cents. Let's wrap up.
Inquiring about a beach ball you have in the background, maybe.
Perhaps, yeah, maybe. let's finish up chatting about the Floyd Mayweather Jr. Conor McGregor fight Saturday night.
Yes.
Will you be watching?
Like a lot of people are saying when you ask that question, I will watch, but I am not buying it. I'm not pirating it. My friend has elected to buy it. So we will be going over to his house and I'll be contributing a pizza or two and watching it on his 70-incher. But I just personally, I couldn't, if I wasn't going there for the party, I probably wouldn't just sit back and hit the button and buy that show at that price. I just don't think I would just wait for the highlights. But it's weird. A lot of people you talk to, they're going to watch it. They might find some other means to watch it. But I don't see a lot of people saying, yeah, man, I can't wait. I pre-ordered it, which you get from a lot of other fights because I think the fight kind of lacks credibility. It certainly doesn't lack promotion. There's an awareness for this fight, but it feels like it's such a sideshow that people just, they're curious, but they're not going to buy it curious. It's a weird thing. And, you know, I never advocate pirating anything. It's just when I've talked to a lot of people, that's what they've said in the last few days. The promotion's been pretty interesting for it. What did you think of the money belt that the WBC put out there yesterday, I guess? They're not, obviously, there's no belt on the line. WBC doesn't have any skin in the game per se, but they always find
No, they have alligator skin in
the game. They have alligator skin. I mean, this to me is the most ridiculously opulent thing I've ever seen, which covers a lot of ground. But WBC finding a way to get their three letters in this big promotion, even though they're really not in it.
Yeah, what a ridiculous championship. I mean, maybe we could have auctioned that championship off and used that money for like a really noble cause out there. I don't know. Maybe that's just my charitable side that looks at that title.
Given the people involved in this campaign, this promotion,
we could spare a few million and help out the world a little.
Yeah, well, this is more in line with with what we're dealing with. I mean, you look at Money Mayweather and Conor McGregor. They kind of zero in on the opulence. So
don't let Stan Hansen near that title.
Jesus, I'll tell you, it's a cool looking title. I'm not a big fan of boxing titles. This is a pretty dope title. But will you be watching this? Will you be? I'm pretty sure you're going to be watching it. But will you be paying to watch it?
Yeah, I'm like you. I'm going to a party to watch it, so it's going to be a big group of people, and we're ordering it and just all chipping in. So it should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I think everyone's curious to see what the end result of this is and what happens. I think it's going to be fascinating during that first round and just seeing what the strategy is and what happens. And maybe it'll be an awful fight. Maybe it will be something that is totally out of left field. I think that it's got a lot of interest, a ton of curiosity. It's hard to measure the success of this up against the Floyd Mayweather Manny Pacquiao record. To me, it's I don't sense it's going to top 4.6 million buys, but I mean, like, if a Major League Baseball player were to go out and crank 60 home runs, it's not beating Barry Bonds' record, but 60 home runs is really impressive. So if this does 3 million, that's really incredible what this generates. And I feel it could top 3. Once you're getting to that high of a range of buys, it's who knows? Who knows what the ceiling is for this fight and what the demand is like. We know it's big. It's just a question of how big it is. I mean, the gate is expected to top Mayweather and Pacquiao, so it's going to be a gigantic money fight and one in which there will probably be a book written on this eventually someday of the whole making of it and the business this fight generates.
Well, I mean, we already saw in the last 12 hours at least two $1 million bets come in on Mayweather, and that's shifted the odds because they were such high dollar bets, and I'm sure more activity is going to happen over the next 24 hours. And we should also mention that this does have a tie into pro wrestling on top of just the build to it, which has been wild. In that Mauro Ranallo, NXT's own Mauro Ranallo,
who just called Thursday night's tapings at Full Sail.
He went right over to Vegas and will be calling the fight on Saturday night. And that to me is probably one of the bigger selling points of watching this is hearing Mauro call it. His talents are amazing in this capacity. And, it's been for Mauro probably an up and down year, but he's had so many successes, and this one is a great milestone for Mauro to be able to call a big fight. I mean, this is one of those fights you're going to hear Mauro forever because of this fight, because this is a fight that's going to be referred to, for various reasons. For a long time. And so he's going to be a part of history. Also, my friend Ray Flores, who has done some wrestling announcing for AAA. I booked him actually to do AAA Worldwide on Fight Network. So he's tied into the Fight Network. And also had him as the cage announcer for Combate Americas. He will be involved. He's been part of the promotional event doing the ring announcing, or I guess the hype to set up Mayweather coming out and all these markets along with McGregor. So a few wrestling connections tied into this big build. But in terms of a pay-per-view prediction, I don't even have the wildest idea. I don't think it's going to hit any of the big milestones we've seen recently. I don't. I'd be surprised. I think it'll do well, but I don't think it needs to do, in terms of sheer numbers, in terms of orders, what prior shows have done just based on how it's priced.
Yeah, and just so many interesting ramifications based on the outcome of this fight of whatever is next, specifically for Conor McGregor and how this plays out. And I know a lot of people, the comparison point they've made is to Muhammad Ali, Antonio Inoki. Mm. And I look at this somewhat similar to a much smaller version, but when Brock Lesnar had his first fight in the UFC with Frank Mir, where very limited experience, he had one MMA fight coming in with a very limited skill set against a high level jiu-jitsu practitioner and a former champion. In Frank Mir, you had two opposite audiences converging in pro wrestling and the MMA audience. And in that fight, Lesnar had just enough that he earned people's respect and was tapped out in the first round, and it set up a rematch down the road. And there's so many different scenarios of what can happen on Saturday that I think the bar is pretty low for McGregor to have a moral victory in all of this, because I think the expectation level is so low of what he can do against the best boxer of this generation, that save for an instant 30-second knockout, I think if he gets out of the first round, I think people will applaud him. So I don't know how big the risk truly is for Conor McGregor in all of this, that he doesn't come out of this a bigger star than he walked in as.
This to me is more like when you saw like Bob Sapp, you know, doing his thing back in the day in Japan. It's like such a freak show in that way. Different physically, but it's like, does this thing really have credibility? But okay, I'll fucking watch it. It's pretty fucking wild. That kind of is more in line with what I see here. I can't speak to the Inoki Ali thing because there's some great books. Josh Gross wrote a great book about it recently. I just wasn't alive. I can't really tell you, you know, feel that same connection to it, but they're going to make themselves a ton of money, and You know, it is a throwback in a lot of ways, I guess, to the 70s and that special attraction. And one last thing before we shut this show down. Bruno met Bruno recently in Pittsburgh.
Which Bruno met which Bruno?
Mars.
And Bruno
his
Lauer?
Namesake. His namesake, Bruno Sammartino, who he was named after. And it's a great photo. And you see the two of them there. And I wonder if Vince knows who Bruno Mars is and if he probably got signed by WWE just be called Mars. Get rid of both names. God damn.
Can't have two guys with the same name.
God damn. Just get rid of it. Just call him Mars. Give him some sort of aluminum foil. He'll be there from outer space. Oh, my God. These kind of conversations once did happen. But it was pretty cool to see that photo. And I wonder if Bruno Sammartino thought, who is this guy? I don't know. But it's cool to see Bruno out doing some PR. He doesn't do a lot anymore because he's getting up there in age. But it was a cool thing. I'd love to see more Bruno Sammartino and, well, find Mars as well. But I'd love to see Bruno Sammartino kind of showcase and do more with the network. Not like have him out there as a talking head, but kind of showcase what he meant to the company more. I don't feel like we got that since the Hall of Fame. It felt like really once you got Bruno, okay, mission accomplished, but I haven't seen as much. And the table for three was cool, a little weird, but you know, cool enough.
I thought it was such polar opposites of Ric Flair and just, Bruno Sammartino, you know, like two opposite lives that those two have lived.
It's just like I want to see like a real good table for three would have been like Bruno. Back in the day, it would probably have been Bruno, Arnold Scollin, and like Dominic DiNucci, like those three, or even Pedro Morales with those guys, because they could like Dominic. I've been in the room with Bruno and Dominic DiNucci; they're boys, and my God, the stories, the ball busting. It's just like it was a real honor to be around that because it was just so cool. And actually, we happened to have a hell of a dinner that night. And oddly enough, another wrestling person that was shooting that was the good doctor Mike Lano, who doesn't come up anymore really in wrestling, but he was, I think, shooting that show, that dinner thing for something that was supposed to be filmed. But Bruno and Dominic, awesome guys. They should do a table for three with those two and put Pedro in there or any guys from that era, and it would be magic. But Rick, yeah, technically from that era, but just a different social circle, different kind of lifestyle. But and also shout out to Ric Flair, who's still in the midst of recovering from some health issues like everyone's been talking about and discussing. It's hard to see a guy go through that, and he seems like he's on the mend. It's going to be a long process, but I know someone that actually went in and saw him recently, and they said he's getting there. So that's good. And
very good news to hear. Yeah. And it's been fun to watch on TV where it's like every WWE show they've worked in something for Ric Flair into promos and just to get a little mention within the show for Ric Flair as well. All right. We have Court and I have now talked for over 3 hours today.
It's nice catching up.
You've got to hear at least half of it, and the rest, me and Court had a wonderful conversation. hopefully you're hearing this. I will be crying if you are not.
I'm recording it too, just to avoid another incident. And I will tell everyone, rest assured, actually, version two of this show is a lot better than version one. Trust me on that. This is a much better version of the podcast than
it's
the one
funny,
we did this morning.
It's funny, we hardly repeated ourselves. Like we went into different areas the second show, like there was very little overlap, so it was kind of two completely different shows.
Yeah, but this is the better one. I will definitely say that. I think this is
sure.
the better one.
Well, people can hear it. So
well, yeah. Well,
it's literally the only version.
Yeah, they're fucked either way. I mean, this is all they're getting. So that being said, what's going on over in the land of live audio wrestling?
Well, we have all of our regular shows up at liveaudiowrestling.com. There's a new review away up. It was actually Braden and our man Bartender Dave filling in today to review the new Colonel Sanders / Shawn Michaels classic, Pure Country, Pure Heart, which is a movie that I couldn't envision watching, but the two did. So they've got a review of that up. And then The Law, Sunday night, 11 Eastern, Jason Agnew and Dan Lavransky will be joined by Jim Ross live on the show. I'll also be stopping by to chat Mayweather McGregor news, and Dave Meltzer will be on the program. So your best way is to subscribe to Live Audio Wrestling on iTunes. You'll never miss a show. And you can catch our video content at youtube.com / live audio wrestling. And in the world of MLW, it's more than just podcasts that are going on. Big live event coming up.
Yeah.
360 series. Tell us about it all.
Yeah, the world of MLW does not stop. It never stops. And we have the new MLW 360 series, which looks at the journey of our main eventers going into MLW One Shot. It's very much like UFC Embedded, I guess. It's an experiment to try to apply it to wrestling. I hope you like it. It's a different thing. You can check that out now on our MLW OTT platform, MLW.tv, or on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Major League Wrestling. You can learn all about MLW One Shot on our new site we just relaunched, MLW.com. You can also buy tickets for as low as $15 to MLW One Shot. It's Thursday night, October 5th. And don't worry, NXT has told the world they are taping the day before, not on Thursday, but on Wednesday. So we dodged a bullet. Whew. And so you can check out two back-to-back nights of great wrestling. And Jeff Cobb will be wrestling for us, Sami Callihan versus MVP. And of course, in our main event, Shane Swerve Strickland versus King Ricochet. Can he dethrone the king? We'll see. And we're going to be announcing a lot more talent over the next few weeks. And like we said, it'll be available within 72 hours if you can't get down to Orlando on MLW.tv, with Rich Bucchini calling the action along with Tony Schiavone in what I hope will be close, if not near, the greatest night in the history of our sport. We will see. But learn all about that at MLW.com.
And to quote the man, we're all out of time. We gotta go.